Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
This resolution is straightforward and enforceable. It calls for the end of supplying weapons and military aid as we see the war ongoing and raging in Gaza. 7% of Democrats support the party's current position in this conflict and in this crisis.
A Democratic National Committee panel has rejected a resolution calling for an arms embargo against Israel and a ceasefire in Gaza. We'll speak with the resolution's sponsor, Allison Minerly, the 26-year-old DNC member from Florida. But first, we go to the head of pediatrics at Nasser Hospital in Gaza, where health officials are reporting an additional 10 deaths due to starvation and malnutrition, including at least two children. Then, Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook says she'll file a lawsuit against President Trump's attempts to illegally remove her from her post. She's the first Black woman to sit on the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors.
What's important to understand about the president's attempted firing of Governor Lisa Cook is that as much as it is about Governor Cook, it's also not about Governor Cook at all. It is about the Federal Reserve's independence as a central bank, their authority to set monetary policy, and yet another power grab by a president intent on controlling all levers of government.
We'll speak with Aya Ibrahim, former senior policy advisor at the White House National Economic Council, where she supported Lisa Cook's confirmation. And 20 years ago this week, Hurricane Katrina devastated New Orleans in one of the worst natural disasters in U.S. history, due in part to a failed response from FEMA. FEMA workers have been suspended after they sent a Katrina declaration to Congress to protest the Trump administration rolling back many reforms put in place after the deadly storm. We'll talk to a former FEMA spokesperson who signed the letter. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. 10 Palestinians, including two children, have starved to death in Gaza in the past 24 hours, bringing the total number of starvation-related deaths in the besieged strip to 313. 119 are children. Officials in Gaza say only 14% of essential food items were allowed into the enclave last month. At least 76 Palestinians have also been killed in Israeli attacks in Gaza since dawn, including 18 people seeking food. This comes as Al Jazeera reports Israeli forces are leveling entire blocks of Gaza City. The Israeli government's claiming Monday's deadly strike on Nasser Hospital targeted a camera used by Hamas for surveillance, but Israel provided no evidence to back up the claim. They didn't explain the second attack. It was a double-tap strike that killed 21 people, including five journalists. In media news, a Reuters photojournalist has resigned over her outlet's response to Israel's killing of journalists in Gaza, including Reuters cameraman Hussam al-Masri, who was killed in the Nasser Hospital attack. In a statement, Valerie Zink said, quote, "By repeating Israel's genocidal fabrications without determining if they have any credibility, Western media outlets have made possible the killing of more journalists in 2 years on one tiny strip of land than in World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, and Ukraine combined," unquote. Meanwhile, Human Rights Watch is saying U.S. forces and personnel can be held liable for Israeli war crimes for, quote, providing intelligence for Israeli strikes and conducting extensive coordination and planning, unquote. In Israel, nationwide protests continue. On Tuesday, more than 350,000 people gathered at Tel Aviv's public plaza, calling on the government to accept a ceasefire deal to end the war on Gaza. Large protests were also held in Jerusalem. This is Michal Gomel Blank, a protester in Jerusalem.
We are here demonstrating in front of the cabinet, the government meeting that is supposed to discuss a deal for returning the hostages and end the fighting and the war. And we are here to remind our government that the deal needs to be sealed. All the hostages need to come back home. And we need to stop the war in order to do this.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces are conducting a raid on Nablus. At least 80 Palestinians have been injured. This comes a day after Israeli forces raided Ramallah and El Bire. According to the Palestinian Red Crescent, 58 people were injured, 8 by live fire and 14 by rubber-coated bullets. The Palestinian Ministry of Health said a child had to receive surgery after being hit by live fire. Israeli forces detained 3 Palestinians in the raid. Meanwhile, U.S. Senators Chris Van Hollen and Jeff Merkley visited the West Bank Tuesday and stopped at a Palestinian church in Taibe that was attacked by Israeli settlers. Senator Van Hollen called for an end to settler violence.
Well, we're here overall because we want to focus on the really terrible situation throughout this area, including the war in Gaza. And one of our messages, we need to end the war in Gaza and bring the hostages home. But we also need to end this continued settler violence on the West Bank, which people here in this town of Taibe witnessed and experienced firsthand.
A coalition of 100 human and civil rights groups are calling on Secretary of State Marco Rubio to secure the release of Mohammed Ibrahim, a 16-year-old Palestinian-American who's been held in an Israeli prison for 6 months. The coalition includes the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, the Center for Constitutional Rights, and Pax Christi USA. In a joint letter, the groups say, quote, Mohammed is suffering from scabies and has not received any medication. He's also lost over 30 pounds due to Israel denying him food and medical treatment, unquote. He was abducted from his family home in the West Bank over allegations of rock throwing and is currently being held in Israel's Ofer prison, known for its human rights abuses. There are no charges against him. A Democratic National Committee panel has rejected a resolution calling for an arms embargo on Israel and a ceasefire in Gaza. The vote came during a DNC meeting in Minneapolis. A second resolution on Israel was initially approved, but then withdrawn by its author, DNC Chair Ken Martin. Martin then called for a task force to be formed to help build party unity on the issue. We'll speak to the sponsor of the arms embargo resolution later in the program. A group of current and former Microsoft workers occupied the office of Microsoft's president, Brad Smith, Tuesday to protest Microsoft's work with the Israeli military in Gaza. The tech workers accused Microsoft of, quote, powering the genocide in Gaza and the mass surveillance of Palestinians, unquote. 7 protesters were arrested. This comes as Bloomberg reports Microsoft has asked the FBI for help tracking pro-Palestinian protests targeting the company. The Trump administration's making major changes to the U.S. citizenship application process by reinstating neighborhood checks to vet immigrants. In a memo obtained by CBS News, the administration detailed plans to interview neighbors and colleagues of citizenship applicants, reviving a procedure last used 30 years ago by the George H.W. Bush administration. The government had previously waived neighborhood investigations, instead relying on the FBI to conduct background checks of immigrants. The investigations would focus on the moral character of applicants and whether applicants are, quote, well disposed to the good order and happiness of the United States. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has asked a federal appeals court to put on hold a judge's ruling last week that could force the closure of a new immigration jail in the Everglades, the Republicans dubbed Alligator Alcatraz. The judge had ordered the Trump administration to stop transferring immigrants to the jail. Meanwhile, weekly vigils are continuing to be held outside the jail to protest what organizers have described as the inhumane treatment of people detained inside. Republican governors in 19 states have begun mobilizing the National Guard to assist ICE with immigration enforcement efforts. The Pentagon's confirmed reports up to 1,700 National Guard members will be deployed in the states. This comes as President Trump is threatening to send the National Guard to police Chicago against the wishes of local and state officials there. In other immigration news, The Lever reports ICE is shielding details about its deportation flights by taking advantage of a regulatory loophole that was designed to make it harder to track the private flights of celebrities like Taylor Swift. In recent months, a number of private charter airlines working with ICE have added their planes to a special list developed by the private jet lobby to keep flight data more secret. On Tuesday, during a three-hour cabinet meeting, President Trump said his administration will seek the death penalty in all murder cases in Washington, D.C. He failed to provide any details on the policy, considering the fact the District of Columbia does not authorize capital punishment.
Anybody murders something in the Capitol, capital punishment, capital punishment. If somebody kills somebody in the Capitol, Washington, D.C., we're going to be seeking the death penalty.
During the more than three-hour cabinet meeting, President Trump also said the U.S. would accept up to 600,000 Chinese students, an announcement that quickly drew backlash from his MAGA base, including from Steve Bannon and Laura Loomer. Trump said he liked having Chinese students in the U.S.
But I like that their students come here. I like that other country students come here. And you know what would happen if they didn't? Our college system would go to hell very quickly. You'd have, and it wouldn't be the top colleges. It would be colleges that struggle on the bottom. And you take out 300,000 or 600,000 students out of the system.
The president's comments are a major shift from his previous policy. Back in May, the State Department announced it was vetting Chinese students for connections to the Chinese Communist Party. Federal Reserve Governor Lisa Cook says she'll file a lawsuit against President Trump's attempts to remove her from her post. Cook's the first Black woman to sit on the Federal Reserve's Board of Governors. Trump is claiming without evidence that Cook committed mortgage fraud. Cook's attorney says the president, quote, lacks any factual or legal basis to fire her. Trump's also repeatedly threatened to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell, who's been pressured by the president to lower interest rates. We'll have more on the story later in the broadcast. Lebanese journalists are demanding an apology from Tom Barrack, the U.S. envoy to Syria, for demeaning comments he made at a press conference in Beirut.
The moment that this starts becoming chaotic, like animalistic, we're gone. So you want to know what's happening? Act civilized, act kind, act tolerant, because this is the problem with what's happening in the region.
The Union of Journalists in Lebanon called for a boycott of all future events with Tom Barrack unless he apologizes for his comments, saying, quote, the content of his remarks reflects ingrained colonial arrogance towards the peoples of the region and constitutes a blatant violation of basic diplomatic etiquette and the values that diplomacy should represent, chief among them respect for press freedom and the people's right to knowledge, unquote. FEMA's suspending staff members who signed a letter criticizing the Trump administration for gutting the agency's ability to handle natural disasters. The letter came just days before the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, one of the deadliest and costliest hurricanes in U.S. history. At least 36 employees have signed their full names to the letter, titled the Katrina Declaration. And about 150 others have signed the letter anonymously. On Tuesday, FEMA told the staffers they were put on administrative leave in a, quote, non-duty status while continuing to receive pay and benefits, unquote. We'll speak with a former FEMA spokesperson who signed the letter. The Social Security Administration's chief data officer has said the personal information of hundreds of millions of Americans was uploaded onto a vulnerable cloud server by members of DOGE, the so-called Department of Government Efficiency. The claim appears in whistleblower complaint filed Tuesday. In the complaint, the official, Charles Borges, writes, quote, should bad actors gain access to this cloud environment, Americans may be susceptible to widespread identity theft, may lose vital health care and food benefits, and the government may be responsible for reissuing every American a new Social Security number at great cost, unquote. Denmark's foreign minister has summoned the top U.S. diplomat in the country after a news report alleged that three American citizens linked to President Trump were conducting covert influence operations in Greenland. Trump has repeatedly stated he wants to capture Greenland from Denmark due to its strategic location and wealth in critical minerals. According to recent polls, most Greenlanders do not want to join the United States. And U.S. tariffs on Indian imports have doubled to 50%. The Trump administration imposed secondary tariffs on India as a penalty for buying oil and weapons from Russia. The Global Trade Research Initiative has warned that tariffs could endanger hundreds of thousands of jobs in India. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now!'s Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
We begin today's show in Gaza, where health officials are reporting an additional 10 deaths due to starvation in the past day, including two children. This brings the total number of starvation-related deaths in Gaza due to Israel's indiscriminate blockade to 313, nearly 120 of whom are children. Israeli attacks continue across the besieged strip as Israel's military forces intensify an offensive in Gaza City, where Israeli tanks and warplanes have leveled entire blocks, destroying family homes. Gaza officials say Israeli strikes have killed at least 75 people in the past 24 hours, including 18 Palestinians killed seeking food. Meanwhile, more Palestinian families have been forced to flee Gaza City due to the relentless Israeli shelling.
Where is the south? Even if we die, we won't go to the south of Gaza. The south is worse than here. There is no safety here or there. It is all the same.
This all comes as Human Rights Watch says U.S. military personnel and contractors can be held liable for Israeli war crimes committed in Gaza for, quote, providing intelligence for Israeli strikes and conducting extensive coordination and planning, unquote. Today, Trump is set to chair a White House meeting on a comprehensive plan for managing post-war Gaza. For more, we go to Gaza, where we're joined by Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah. He's the head of pediatrics at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. First of all, our condolences on this latest attack on Nasser Hospital. The world has recoiled in outrage this weekend with the killing of five journalists, as well as healthcare workers and civil defense workers who ran to the aid of the Reuters journalist who had been putting up a live stream. Can you explain what you understood happened and the Israeli response, calling it a tragic mishap, this double tap strike?
Okay, thank you for having me, my friend and my colleagues. First, 2 days ago, nearly at 10:20 in the morning, while I was in my office while examining a case, my colleague sent it for me for consultation. and I put a stethoscope in my ears. Suddenly, we heard a very loud voice. It's like something extreme voice and a very loud voice, which is moved the building that we are standing or sitting in it. We were completely confused. Even the mother that I was examining her child has syncopal attack and fainting. And we were confused to treat the mother or to continue examining the patient or to go downstairs and to see what's happening. Later on, we discovered that there were a bomb tank was directed to the external stairs of El Yassin building. You know, El Yassin building, it is the main building of Nasser Medical Complex. It is belongs to the operation theater. It belongs to, it contains also the ICUs. It contains also the lab and the reception room. All the main department in Nasser Medical Complex are in El Yassin building. This stair is outstairs. It's like emergency stairs. The top of that stairs is, they have some area in the fourth floor. This area is the most powerful for a SIM card. You know, the journalists are using SIM cards for covering their events, for documented their events, and sent that for their agencies. The first journalist, whose name is Hussam, was there, and he was covering the and documented his material and sent by the ASIM card to that area, but he was targeted. Later on, the occupational forces says that they are targeting something like a camera. I understand that you want to damage the camera. Why you are killing the people? You have high technique. You have air drone. You have the snipers. You have everything. You can shoot the camera. Okay. You can evacuate. You can tell the administration of Nasser Medical Complex evacuate that camera with the journalist from that area. What I mean that the first attack was double attack. The first attack is for the external stairs of El Yassin building, and in the same time there were another attack for the balcony of El Yassin building in the fourth floor. In that balcony there were doctors. There are medical students in the sixth year of faculty of Al Azhar University, which is local university, and they are studying medicine, and they were discussing the cases of intensive care unit with their colleagues. So a doctor was executed, unfortunately, and Hussam, the journalist, also was executed, and also his assistant, the photographer, was severely injured. We, when we hear the voice, all the hospital, all the journalists, all the rescue team, they go upstairs to save their colleagues. You know, we are as Palestinian, we are something like sympathy with the injured patient. Everyone tried to help. Everyone, they are emotionally, highly emotion to help. Okay, so the rescue team is upstairs. The journalists are upstairs. When they are collecting and they try to make rescue or to do resuscitation and to do evacuation for the injured patient, unfortunately, another bomb tank came and it make a massacre there. There were nearly 18 persons were killed, five from them journalists, four in this attack and one in the previous attack. Also, three or four guys from the security guys of the hospital, civil defense also were killed, and the doctor were killed, and some person who want to help also were killed. So again, this is a full crime. This deliberate compound attack constitutes a calculated trap aimed at targeting rescue team. And this is unbelievable. The journalist, I think this is for silencing witnesses and undermining the channel of survival for anyone to tell what's happening there. So it is unbelievable to talk about that we want the camera. If you want the camera, why you did the second attack? If you want to someone that you are talking, that someone is belongs to us. All the journalists are belongs to Associated Press, NBC, American Channel, for Reuters, for Palestine. All of them, they are known for everyone. Why you did this massacre for them? It's unbelievable. It's incredible. It crosses all the red lines. But I will understand that this is normal, because this is the number of 245 journalists were killed since the beginning of the war. I can understand that one of them...
Dr. Alfano, yes. I wanted to ask you, in addition to the people being killed by the shelling and the bombing of the Israelis, there are the reports of the increasing number of dead from famine and starvation, over 300 Palestinians now. What is the condition of the, the Israelis are saying that there's plenty of food, and it's just Hamas is stealing it. Could you respond to this question of the food situation and starvation that you're witnessing in Gaza?
According to the famine and severe acute malnutrition, my friend, we have to understand some critical points. First, that Gaza Strip needs 600 trucks every day to be fully feeding, fully medical supplies for everything. The number of trucks that coming nowadays is just 50 trucks. This is the first thing. Second, Gaza Strip is closing the closed borders since the last March. We are talking about 5 months. So if you need to recompensate or compensate the quantity, so you have to more trucks to be get in. The third, and this is the most important one, and we want the audience and everyone watching us to understand that the Israeli forces ask the trucks, the 50 trucks, to come inside area that belongs to them, okay? And they put it for the gangs and for someone to get inside. It's not delivered for the NGOs, for UNRWA, for UNICEF. And when, please, and when someone try to protect that trucks and try to deliver it for UNRWA or for UNICEF, they targeting it by air drone. This is like chaos engineering. Among the media, the trucks are coming inside Gaza. And you see the flowers, someone is holding the flower. But this is actually like a sand in the eye. This is not a solution and not a final result for to end that that famine and that severe acute malnutrition. So I think that we will see a number of increasing of severe acute malnutrition. According to the media of Israel, that they are talking about someone is stealing Hamas or stealing, this is something ended, and everyone knows that all that food will come to the UNICEF or UNRWA and will be distributed according to the civilian record, according to the identity card for everyone. Everyone will receive his food, and everyone will receive his quantity that it is dealing with him with morality and with humanity. The distribution that they are using with the GHF and the method that they are using with it, it is dealing with the Palestinian, sorry for explanation and for the expression, like an animals. It is unbelievable. I am a doctor. I am 53 years ago. I will never go to the GHF because I'm unable to go there. And if I go there, I afraid to get back as a body or someone, my son or my daughter. So, my friend, we will see, and we expect to see a lot of cases of severe acute malnutrition every day. We receive either cases is more and more aggressive, and every day or day by day, we receive someone who come with his son who was arrested and died in the evacuated area to the hospital.
Dr. Ahmed Al-Farah, I want to thank you so much for being with us, head of pediatrics at Nasser Hospital, where he's speaking to us from in Khan Yunis. He himself has been displaced twice, now lives in a tent. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. A Democratic National Committee panel